came under the suspicion of the Polish women, because our Polish accents, obviously, were not of the same area, because we were born in different parts of the country. So that's all you had to be, is under suspicion. Well, the next thing that happened, of course, we were taken to the Gestapo headquarters, were interrogated for days on end in solitary confinement, eventually sentenced to death. Because we
sentenced to death for what?
Well, now let me tell you, three charges were against us. We entered Germany illegally. That's what they said, okay? We had documents they suspected that didn't belong to us, although the documents were in order. And thirdly, they suspected we're Jewish. All these three things carried the death penalty. And we had a kind of trial. So we were sentenced to death. We had a mock execution. We were 12 of us, and we...
What
we
happened during that?
Well, we were placed against the wall in a prison, yeah, with our arms up against the wall, with all the machine guns in position, and with the riot police kind of, you know, what they call the police battalions, armed police battalions, already there, ready to shoot. So there were these machine guns were all in position. And there was this huge explosion, and they shot. The shots were fired. All the shots were fired into the air. Yeah, there was a good reason for that. And then, of course, a lot of the women fell to the ground, and my first impression was, well, I hadn't been hit. But, of course, I wasn't hit. No one was hit, because that was a mocking execution. Now,
it's so cruel.
Yeah, well, that's what they did. But then they said, oh, no, we're not just going to shoot you like that. Oh, no, no. We're going to commute your life sentence to life in prison, death sentence to life imprisonment in Auschwitz. And that's how I then came into Auschwitz from the prison.
What was the journey like to Auschwitz?
Well, we were taken from one prison to another. We were in Halle, Leipzig, and Dresden prisons, you know. And you know why they were transferring us to Auschwitz like this? Because they said that they're going to find out where these documents came from. Because they never found out, you know, where our documents came from. For some unknown reason, we didn't manage to keep this quiet. We kept on saying, well, you know, we don't know. We had them given. We don't know. And so eventually they said, well, in Auschwitz, they're going to find out, because they're absolutely desperate to find out who was providing these documents.
Can you remember the first day you arrived there?
The arrival in Auschwitz was your defining moment of your life, you know?
Can you describe it to me?
Yeah, I can describe it to you, because it's computerized in my head. So, yes, I can. So the first thing that happened to you, you were thrown out of these trucks, and you were what you saw were men in uniforms with whips and dogs that tried to get at you. There was a stench of something that you didn't know what it was. Well, of course, we know now what it was. It was burning bodies. There was this stench. There was a glow of fire in the distance and a huge amount of smoke, which we couldn't understand. And you got very confused, because everything happened at breakneck speed. Almost immediately, you had to sort of stand, go, run. And they took you before you knew where you were. You got completely confused into a building, which, of course, we didn't know what it was. So you got into this building, into a hall, and the first thing you were, you're stripped. Everything was taken from you. You were put under water, showers, cold showers. No towels, no soap, nothing, just these cold showers. Then you were driven into the next hall, all at breakneck speed. So you never had time to think. Into the next hall. There, what happened there? Well, you were thrown some rags, and I did explain. We had prisoner of war uniforms, Russian prisoners of war, because they killed them just before we arrived, sort of one layer of uniforms, and wooden clogs. And then you were driven into the next hall, where, mind you, you were still naked, you were driven into the next hall, where where women were sitting on stools and were shaving all your hair. And then you were driven into the next hall, where women were sitting on sort of low stools and things, and trestle tables, with most peculiar pens in their hands, like a sharp object. And before you knew where you were, they grabbed your arm and punched your skin and tattooed your number. And that's when you lost your name. All right? The next thing is you were at breakneck speed out into the open, and you were standing roll call. We didn't know what that was all about. You know, you stood about like 3 hours, still naked, because you were not allowed to put your clothes on. So a lot of people, you know, died of shock, you can imagine, or of exposure. That lasted about 3 hours.
So you were seeing at that stage people just dropping dead in front of you?
Oh, sure. People were dropping dead. Women were just dropping dead.
And what would happen to them when they dropped to the ground?
Well, they were still counted. Everybody had to be counted. You know, it was dead body or live body. Still had to be counted. And if numbers didn't tally, well, you stood until numbers did tally, because they knew exactly how many numbers there were. So after that, you thought, oh, my God, now maybe you can go into a hut. Well, you were driven into this hut. And, of course, you couldn't lie down anywhere because there were already 1,000 people in there. Yeah? And that was your kind of initiation into Auschwitz. Now, I was lucky because...
My goodness. How is your brain, Kitty, coping with that at that stage, that torture?
Well, at that stage, you can't think because everything's happening so fast. And all these whips and beatings by... You know, you know all about the privileged prisoners who had these enormous powers with their whips in their hands. So
they were whipping you like cattle.
Oh, sure. Oh, yes, with whips all the time. So, you know, you're lucky if you weren't hit. And so that was your initiation. But what I'm trying to tell you is I was lucky in the sense that I came from prison. But people who arrived, I know, who came from all over Europe, as you know, to the very same siding, for them, it was quite different. Because when they arrived, the first thing they had to do, they were segregated. You know, so men to one side, women to the other, women with children to another side. And there was the SS doctors pointing fingers right and left. And people were segregated, and families were parted and never, ever saw one another again because not many were allowed into the camp. So that was arrival for the majority of people.
So my
arrival was different.
That's the arrival. You were put into this hut on the first night. There are, as you describe, 1,000 people already there, so there's no room to lie down.
No, that's right.
So where do you sleep?
In the mud. On the floor. You didn't sleep. You were sitting. Very often, you didn't have anywhere to sleep. And remember, to talk about Auschwitz, you need at least 2 hours. Because everything in Auschwitz had to be paid for. Everything, even a place to sleep.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, today you have to pay for everything as well, haven't you? It was exactly the same in Auschwitz. Everything had to be paid for. Survival meant... You pay for everything.
You pay who?
The next prisoner who perhaps has got access to something or has got powers to help
pay
you.
Pay them with what?
Well, not with money. Money was absolutely useless because you couldn't eat it. Everything that was useful to sustain life, clothes, food, a bread ration, anything, but not money. Money wasn't of any use. You know, it isn't the easy thing to actually understand, is it?
No.
Because it's like being on another planet. But basically, it's the same as in ordinary life. You had to pay for it. Everything had to be paid for. If you wanted access to a toilet, most likely you had to pay for it. To get in. Most likely you had to pay to have access to water because there was somebody in charge of the water. And, you know, if you wanted to get beaten up, you would have got in. But if you could give her something, anything that would be useful to her, yes, she'd let you in.
Goodness.
to understand Auschwitz, you'd be amazed how long it takes to get it into your head.
And what was the work like in there? How long a day, and what was the level of
the
work?
I will tell you, the whistles blew at 4 in the morning, all right? And when the whistles blew, you had to go out and stand roll call. Roll call was twice a day. And did you know, if numbers didn't tally, you stood until they did, and they had one roll call. You won't believe this, but it's absolutely true. That lasted 24 hours. Because numbers didn't tally. And if there was something like an escape, which did happen, well, then, of course, the whole camp stood until they found this person, or they were punished because one person had disappeared, you know? So your day started with a roll call.
Can you help me, Kitty, understand the German guards, understand the mentality as you got to know of them?
No, look. Another thing about Auschwitz is that there were no such thing, really, as German guards. The German guards were in the watchtowers, okay? Your first enemy were your fellow prisoners who had enormous powers. And, yeah, we had all these commandants, you know, that would come in. But believe you me, the commandants never touched anyone. They didn't have to. They had everybody else to do their dirty work. They didn't have to do it. They were simply giving the orders. So very often, the commandants, you know, after the war, when they were charged, I mean, all these commandants, most of them have actually been caught. They will always say, well, I never touched a prisoner, you know. I didn't beat anybody up. They didn't have to. They were the murderers, what they call the desktop murderers.
And so did these prisoner guards, did they kill many people?
Yes. Yeah. They did.
Why?
To have their power.
In what way, though? Did they shoot them? Did they
No, they didn't. No, there wasn't. They didn't have any guns.
So what did they do?
Well, mostly they had whips. Mostly they would kick them to death. They found all kinds of shovels. They'd kill them with the shovels, you know, when you were working outside digging somewhere. Well, these kind of implements, not with weapons. Because they're not even the prisoners, you know, the privileged prisoners didn't have any weapons.
Kitty, what does that do to you as someone who in your life up to that stage, you'd never seen this level of barbarity? What do you become as a human being to tolerate that?
Yeah, because I will tell you, because in Auschwitz, although it's really unbelievable, you saw the worst of human nature and the best of human nature, okay? Why did you see the best of human nature? Well, I'll tell you. Because survival, especially for the women, I'm talking from the women's point of view, okay? What the women, shall we say girls, were teenage girls mostly, what they did is they formed little families. They're like 3 or 4 girls together. One would work in one place, one in another. And that's how they managed to, that's how you managed to survive. You couldn't survive on your own. So therefore, your friends were absolutely crucial to your survival. And you do everything for your friends. Every day you would lay down your life for your friends. Because if somebody was sick, they couldn't survive without you. So you had to get there to do something for them. To do that, you risk your life. So I'm saying that among all this, you saw the best of human nature.
But when you, and that's really interesting, isn't it?
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's solidarity, isn't it? And the human spirit
joining
others in
that's
order
right.
to survive. But on the other side of that, with the very worst that you saw in human beings, how do you cope with seeing that as a human being, as an ordinary, decent person? What do you become immune to it?
Well, you're seeing both these sides, and then I was only 15 and a half when I got into Auschwitz. They say 16. I was actually 15 and a half. So you can imagine, as far as I was concerned, I didn't think deeply enough about this. With hindsight, I'm thinking how you saw both sides. When you were there, all you were concerned about, the main thing to live, find somewhere to sleep, find something to eat.
Why, Kitty, wouldn't your main goal be to die? If it was that bad, was death not better than life?
Yeah, that's right. Death was the way out. And a lot of my friends, that's what they chose.
Did you contemplate suicide?
Yes, I did. I'll tell you why. I did. And because at one stage, I was actually, I had typhus. I've been in Auschwitz 2 years, so loads of things happened. At one time, I had typhus. Well, after that, I did manage to actually stay and work within, it's not a hospital, like we call it. People were confined to a place because of infections. Okay, so it was so-called sick bay. Now, while I was there working, All my job was carrying bodies. You know, that's all I was doing. You couldn't nurse anyone, but at least I had a job there. While I was there, we had a kind of selection. Every day there was a selection of all the sick that they were killing off, dying off. You know, getting died off. And while I was there, I had some friends that we were this close little family. 1 minute they were there, and the next minute they were gone. Well, these friends were there, and I kept them there in this hospital. They had already recovered, you see. So they also had typhus. Everybody had typhus. And, you know, one day this man, Dr. Mengele, came, and he said, "I'm emptying the whole block." That means all the patients were going to die. And, you know, I had to load my friends onto the lorries. And at that point, I just didn't want to live. I just really wanted to go as well. And, you know, my mother saw the situation, and she came and grabbed me. Put it that way, and that's really, I would have gone. That was the lowest point, you know, having actually loaded my friends to die. That was, you know, for me, the end.
And did you ever come close, Kitty, not to killing yourself, but being killed by others?
All the time. Because you were not safe. You were not safe at any minute of the day or night.
So does any memory still impact on you, and when you nearly lost your life? Can you share one with me?
Well, there were so many blooming occasions. I have difficulties finding one to suit the occasion. But I'll tell you where it was really, really touch and go. You need to understand what happened towards the end of 1944. They began evacuating Auschwitz and all these camps all around that area. So they were evacuating people on foot. I survived the death march.
How long was this march? What were you marching over?
I think we walked about 3 weeks, because we were taken through the wilderness into the Sudeten mountain range and into Czechoslovakia, where they loaded us on open coal trucks, those that survived, my group.
But during this march, presumably, yeah, there were elderly people being forced to march.
No, there were no elderly. No, there were no elderly. No, my mother was the oldest, in fact, I would say, the oldest who survived the death march. They were all younger people, but in a terrible condition, you know.
Yeah.
Most of them were on the point of death, in any case, from starvation. So, yeah, we were on this death march. And there wasn't any food, and you had to go and find some food in the wilderness. They took us in the wilderness because all the main roads were choked with the military and refugees that were running away, escaping.
When you survived that, how did you end up escaping, Kitty? What happened?
I didn't escape. No. No, no, no. It was very dangerous to escape. You could have escaped because, you know, we kept a watch on these guards that were guarding us. And when they went to sleep, we tried to wander off looking for food. But it wasn't a proposition to escape. We would have been picked up and shot. It was safer not to do that.
So how did it all end for you?
No, I will tell you which was the worst, where I really nearly lost my life, okay? Eventually, in the spring of 1945, we were loaded into a train, yeah? And that was on the outskirts of Belsen. There was a big siding. And there we were loaded into trains, and the truck I was in was airtight. It was like a container truck, and I can still remember it smelled of cheese. It was like a container. And almost immediately it got so bad that people started fainting, you know, and all the walls were full of condensation because it was airtight. And trains were left there abundant, you know, just and prisoners died. And, of course, we realized, oh, this is going to be the end because no way are we going to get out of this. But our train moved. That's just the astonishing thing. Our train moved and moved to a siding outside a town called Salzwedel. There, it stood on a siding with people dying in this truck, dying all the time because of lack of air. And do you know what I had? I had a knife. And if it hadn't been for this knife, many of us wouldn't have survived. I got to the bottom of the truck, enlarged a gap in the floor of this thing, and my mother and I took it in turns to breathe. At that stage, you didn't want any food, you know, you really only wanted to breathe, you know. And we didn't know whether they're going to open this truck. And then we heard some footsteps outside. And, you know, some of us that were still alive were banging against the walls of the truck. And you won't believe it. It suddenly opened. And we fell out on three men in uniform, you know. And they didn't know what they'd done. There were three German soldiers. And my mother got up, funny enough, and she said in her best German, "We're not going back into this truck. Just shoot us now, please. We're not going in." But really, we demand to be taken into a camp. And, you know, this man went off to, he knew there was a camp outside the town, went to see the commandant, and the commandant said, "Yes, I will have them." And that was the closest. And
my
that
goodness.
Was about 2 weeks prior to liberation.
And tell me this, Kitty, at just the end of the extraordinary story that you have described to me in this interview, how does this leave you feeling about humanity, feeling about human beings and their capacity to be evil?
Well, the capacity is there for evil. It seems to be in everybody, isn't it? And some people more so than others.
Do you really believe it's in everybody?
I would think it can be, yeah. Probably, yes.
Why?
Well, because I've seen it with people that I wouldn't have believed it. That's why. That's why I think, yeah, it probably is. It's within human nature, isn't it?
Do you think it's within you to do to others what was done to you?
But I never did. My conscience is 100% clear because I wasn't going to stoop to this level. You know, my mother drilled it into me, and she would say, "Look, what you do is there are so many dead bodies there. Have everything you need, if you can, from these dead bodies, but you never do anything to a living person."